You are listening to Breakfast on 2SER 107.3. And I've got an idea for you. What if the majority of human endeavour, like if all the little moments we collate together and call history, was in a very real way influenced by humanity's pursuit of intoxication? Now, that is the theory being posed by author Eamon Evans in his latest book, Tanked: How Getting Wasted Shaped Human History. He's ripping apart the boring book of history and finding the real substance, abuse, at the bottom of it. Eamon, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Now, I love the idea that you're posing this as a third theory of how history can be translated. It does sound like something that would have been come up with a rather nasty hangover.
Yeah, I mean, that's just becoming a standard day for me, sadly. So when do I have ideas when not hungover? Yeah, it actually came when I was reading an article about Sigmund Freud. And it was just talking about his whole theory, the subconscious, the whole idea that, you know, the dreams that you have are a doorway to that subconscious. It basically came during a cocaine binge.
Yes.
he had a hellish nightmare and woke up the next morning with all sorts of insights into his life and personality to that date, and the whole sort of practice of psychology was born. And I wondered, you know, where else, what else have drugs and alcohol helped shape? And the answer was a hell of a lot.
A hell of a lot. You go right back to, well, I'm not going to say the dawn of civilization because we're guessing on that one, but certainly the earliest civilizations. And I love the idea that, you know, we wouldn't have pyramids without beer.
Well, absolutely. Well, beer was very much the sort of currency of ancient Egypt. That's what the workers sort of were paid in when they were putting those pyramids together. But yeah, I mean, even if you wanted to define civilization as sort of settling down and sort of, you know, growing crops and sort of developing laws and you know, and property rights and customs, and therefore, you know, going from sort of small packs of sort of 50, 60, 80 people to villages and towns and cities, that arguably all dates back to beer. Basically, about 10,000 years ago, we stopped hunting and gathering, we started growing crops, and there's a very good reason to believe that those crops weren't, you know, for the purposes of bread, they were for the purposes of beer. It would have been much easier to make, and you know, the technology was certainly available.
As you point out, it's quite a few steps to make bread out of some simple grains. Mm-hmm. It's very easy just to let it ferment for a while and hope for the best.
Very much so, and I mean, you're not going to naturally come across bread in the wild, but you are going to naturally come across alcohol. I mean, rotting, fermenting fruit is a thing, and again, I mean, you know, staying speculative, I mean, it could be argued that, you know, the reason man came down from the trees and decided to walk on two legs was because we found that we liked the rotting fruit that had fallen to the ground. I mean, it's an interesting thing that chimpanzees, orangutans and so on, they can't get drunk. If you gave them a glass of wine, they just start to feel ill. But whereas we can, even though we're biologically pretty much identical, and that's simply because we've been doing it for so many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years.
It's an interesting one because it does allow for that additional energy source. Like, there are actual reasons for it beyond the intoxication as well. While you were going all the way through history, were there just any bits where you went, hang on, that can't be right? There is no way that intoxicants were influencing that moment.
Well, I mean, I sort of had a vague sense of this, but I mean, I just had no idea of the extent. Just World War II was an absolute sort of drug fest. I mean, the Germany just pumped out, you know, literally millions of you know, of pills, etc., and distributed them to their soldiers, like crystal meth, speed, you know, all manner of uppers. I mean, and that is essentially how Blitzkrieg was accomplished. That's how sort of people were sort of able to fly all night, drive tanks all day, march for 24, then 48, then 62 hours. I mean, it just, you know, Europe would not have been conquered had the Nazi soldiers not been so high. And the way that sort of Britain was able to fight back was by sort of embracing this new technology of speed and distributing it to pilots and so on. There's a famous quote, the Battle of Britain was won on Benzedrine. And and Churchill himself, I mean, it's generally known that you know, he was a drunk. I mean, he would start each day with a whiskey and a champagne and then, you know, really get stuck in from there. But, you know, the reason why this, you know, fat, old, workaholic was able to drink 20 plus drinks a day and still win a war was because he had his little blue pills, his little green pills, and so on and so forth.
It's an interesting one. Well, some of my notes literally read just Nazi meth. We need to talk about Nazi meth. Because, you know, I grew up same time as you, and we learned a lot about World War II and Australia's involvement. I don't remember anyone mentioning methamphetamines to me at any point while I was learning about the war.
No, it's very odd, isn't it? But, yeah, they're very much a thing, and they continue to be a thing. I mean, to be a top gun in the US Air Force today, you have to sign a form basically saying, I agree to take, you know, X variety of speed for, you know, whenever you require me to. So I can do XYZ long haul bombing mission and so on and so forth. But yeah, I mean, you look at Hitler himself, and in those sort of final days when he's a sort of a pale, sort of sweaty, goose pimply mess. And he was coming off crystal meth. As the Allies sort of marched towards Berlin, they bombed the factory, the final factory that made Pervitin, which was the meth distributed, and to which Hitler had become a bit addicted. And yeah, so the final days of his life saw him losing a war and coming off drugs. And so a fitting end.
Not even once. Now, just quickly, we'll bring it back to home. The Aussie accent and the theory that it has been shaped by alcohol.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a good theory. But, yeah, I mean, it is a theory. I mean, essentially, the study of accents is a very vague one. Simply, we don't know how people used to talk. And, you know, clearly the Aussie accent is a mixture of sort of Cockney and Irish and Northern English and so on. It's a stew with many ingredients. But possibly one of those ingredients could be alcohol, simply because in those early days of the colony, people were very drunk all the time. There's something like less than £300 in cash in the whole of Sydney, in the whole of sort of the colony of Sydney in those first few decades. Yet there were literally thousands of gallons of rum. And so people were drunk all day, every day. And maybe the extent to which we slur our vowels and sort of slacken our jaws could have something to do with the fact that our ancestors were pretty much constantly pissed.
It is all in the book. It is called Tanked, How Getting Wasted Shaped Human History. It's available now. It is a cracker of a read. Eamon Evans, thank you very much.
My pleasure.